Peter Renner, if you haven't met me before. My challenge is to speak this morning. You look, and it's there. Then it's not. Decades go by, and people are prowling the woods, eyes down, hunting for it, crawling, searching, losing hope. And then, all of a sudden, there it is again, in a totally unexpected spot, far from the last sighting, hiding in the dark, barely as tall as your thumb. Probably the rarest plant in Great Britain, the ghost orchid. From a National Geographic article, which I get every day. God's kingdom is like a treasure. See, so this reminded me of that. Hidden in a field for years. And this is from the Message translation. And then accidentally found by a trespasser. The finder's ecstatic. What a find! And proceeds to sell everything he owns to raise money and buy that field. Or God's kingdom is like a jewel merchant on the hunt for excellent pearls. Finding one that is flawless, he immediately sells everything and buys it. So here we have these two people. Normal day out walking, one of them. Person taking a shortcut across someone's field. Trespassing legally, doesn't really matter. Then something catches his eye as he's just walking on, you know. He's going somewhere, no doubt. He's not looking for treasure. He's just going somewhere. It's just as it was. And so he hesitates. And he stops. And he sort of bends. And then he sort of kneels and gets down. And he grovels around among the grass and whatever's there. And then a life-changing moment, just like that. So they go home. They have got this thing now lodged permanently in their mind. It's a treasure. But it's not mine. What am I going to do with it? So they wrangle with the issues and they come to a conclusion. And it's going to cost them everything. And so they begin to make plans. But then there's another guy, another place, another time maybe. He's a merchant. He's a jewel merchant. And he's out buying and selling jewelry. And he finds in a marketplace, and this is no accidental find because he's looking, a beautifully formed pearl. One he'd never seen before, one he'd never owned before, one he'd never been able to buy and sell before. He knew the value immediately he saw it. And he too had to make a decision. He too had to count the cost. There's no gambling here. This was pure negotiation. And so he bought it. The treasure's a surprise, but the pearl was a deliberation. But there's one thing that's common to them both. They were both taken over by an obsession for a possession. And this, to me, is the obvious meaning of these two God stories. Now, possession. Let's just use this word a little bit. Think about it a bit. It's a word with muscle and sinew and bone. It's a special interest, actually, to note that the word treasure here in the Greek language is the word thesaurus. Now, for our young people who are paper challenged, this is a book. I'm just sort of glancing in that direction, but not necessarily. And just to add to it, this is a thesaurus, which is probably a new animal that many of you have not met before. I have used a thesaurus all my life, not this one, the one that I usually used. I threw away because it sort of was old and it was decayed, and that's what we do with things that get old and decayed. Thesaurus. It's a very instructive word, folks, and I want to milk it a little bit right now. So I went to the internet, and as I sometimes do, I work in both worlds, okay? And it's a good thing to do. But a thing like this, what do you do with it now? It's just a burden, so we have to put it somewhere. So I went to the internet on an internet thesaurus, and this is what it says. Just to sort of elaborate this idea of treasure and thesaurus. Because the words come down to us to that sort of form, which is a treasury of words and antonyms and synonyms and things like that. So here we are. So take up this word possess, and the thesaurus will tell you, not like a dictionary, it will say, well, it's to keep, or it's to control, or it's to experience as one's own. Okay, that's straightforward. Gives an illustration. She possesses a keen insight into people. So there's different ways to possess. Then it goes on to the synonyms. And so words related to possess are command, enjoy, have, hold, own, and retain. So we're getting into a treasury here. We're getting to see more that's about this word possess than just the word possess, if we just left it at that. And so it expands our vision, expands our vocabulary, expands our ideas about this word. Words related to possessed, which comes through the thesaurus, is to keep, reserve, withhold, bear, carry, boast, show off, and sport. Now, you wouldn't know that, but they are related. And then you can have rejoice in, and so on. Now, the antonyms, which is the opposite to synonym, is, and the opposite to possess, is to abandon, or to cede, give up, disclaim, disown, hand over, etc. So this is a wonderful thing. For those who like words, it's a great treasure. It expands our horizons from one word to many. Okay, so this also is one of Matthew's words. He uses it more than any other gospel writer. And he uses it in Matthew 2, where the three ancient scholars from the East came and produced gifts to the king, to Jesus. They produced a thesaurus. And a thesaurus is actually also a container. And so we can imagine these three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, brought in a container and placed at the feet of the cross, of the cot, manger, whatever. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Because a thesaurus contains treasure. But the immediate context here, when Matthew uses it, is most instructive. So I go back to my message version and I pick up various phrases and various comments in conversation that Jesus had with his disciples through these kingdom parables. And I put them together, and this is how they go. The disciples came up and asked, "Why do you tell stories?" And he replied, "You've been given insight into God's kingdom. You know how it works. Not everybody has this gift, this insight. It hasn't been given to them. Whenever someone has a ready heart for this, the insights and understandings flow freely. But if there is no readiness, any sense of receptivity soon disappears. If you don't use it, you lose it," in other words. "But you have God-blessed eyes, eyes that see. And God-blessed ears, ears that hear." Jesus asked, "Are you starting to get a handle on this?" And they answered, "Yes." He said, "Then you see how every student well trained in God's kingdom is like the owner of a general store," or in your version might have a storehouse or something like that. Eugene Peterson calls it general store. "Who can put his hands on anything you need, old or new, exactly when you need it." Now, this is a lovely illustration. Because the treasure in the field is the general store. It's the same word, thesaurus. And I love Eugene Peterson for that, because he's got it right. He says, here you are, you're a disciple of Jesus, and you found a treasure. It's a storehouse. It's a general store. You go into a general store now, and you can buy whatever you want. My favorite general store is Bunnings. Yes, it is. I know you don't agree. You'd rather go to some car show or some truck stop. Your general store might be JB Hi-Fi or PB Technology, eh? Or Amazon. There are thousands of them. So you go to this general store, you buy whatever you want or need. It's a great word. They're all thesauruses. They're all thesauruses. I like it a lot. But possessions can possess me. An obsession for a possession is not very far away. But the storehouse of possessions which Jesus alludes to goes much further than the crass illustrations I've just given you. Mind you, Bunnings is not really crass. I couldn't live without it. But anyway, we'll move on. This is a place where we can get insight. This is a place where, as Jesus said to his disciples, this is a place that have, if you've got God-blessed ears, you hear things that you wouldn't hear anywhere else. And because you've got God-blessed eyes, you'll see things that you won't see anywhere else, and others will pass right on by. It's inside experience, it's inside knowledge, it's God-blessed eyes. Now, I don't want to get too cerebral in this whole thing and analyze it too much, because actually I think it is far better when we think about treasure to experience it. Because like the parables, they're not given for analysis, but for engagement and for feeling and for wonder. And this is where the thesaurus will lead us. Now, C.S. Lewis said, amongst many other things in his book, The Four Loves, he said, those like myself whose imagination far exceeds their obedience are subject to a just penalty. Those like myself whose imagination far exceeds their obedience are subject to a just penalty. In other words, there's a kickback on this. If we describe what we have imagined, we may make others and ourselves believe that we have really been there, and so fool both them and ourselves. Probably today we would call it fake it until you make it. And J.I. Packer, whom you may not ever have heard of, and it doesn't really matter, asks, how can we turn our knowledge about God into knowledge of God? You see, I was brought up in a family that never went to church, except that my mother always made us go to church at Christmas and Easter. But I went to a church school. I went to an all-male grammar school, all very English, where we always had religious instruction. We always had assembly with prayers. At the beginning and end of every term, of which there were three, for 11 years in this one school, we heard the sixth chapter of Ephesians read out about the armor of God. And I guess I could have quoted it without too much hesitation. But during religious instruction, I'd get a steel ruler and I'd gouge things out of my desk because I was bored. I was useless at school. I spent 11 years wondering why I should be there. However, I was Christianized, but I wasn't a Christian. I knew about God, but I didn't know God, and there's a huge difference. And this is what C.S. Lewis is saying. Probably if I'd been asked to give a talk at school, and I never was, and of course we had a beautiful built chapel, and we had to go to chapel every week as well. And sometimes we went to the cathedral and so on. I probably could have put together a talk about Christianity and so on. I'm presuming, hypothesizing terribly here, but I never was asked, but I, you know. And this has always been a danger for me, and maybe for you, and it is always a danger for preachers, that we preach beyond our experience. Now, to some extent, this has to be, because we will never ever experience all the things that can be experienced that God wants to give us. But we can teach about them, and hopefully someone will pick up on them and go where I can never go or have never been. So there's that to it. The illustration I love the most is about a family. I didn't have a particularly good family. I mean, not my own, but where I came from. Mind you, we won't go down that track. We'll just stop it there. The point I'm trying to make here is
I could do a magnificent sermon on how to raise a family, raise children, and all that sort of thing. But only my wife and children could tell me how well that was for me, really. Whether I'm actually practicing what I preach. I don't know, often I don't. So here we have a disengagement. And triple blessed are you if you've been brought up in a family that has that you've known love and acceptance and forgiveness and nurture and teaching and discipline and all of the wonderful things that a really good family does. Blessed are you. Because when I talk about family and home, what comes into your mind is wonderful things. And you have a thesaurus of memories and of experience and of feeling and wonder that some of us will never have. And I don't know whether you really appreciate that, but you should get on your knees and thank God for it, because it's quite rare. I was never fathered. My parents broke up when I was 7. And before that, I never, ever remember my father doing anything with me or for me. Although I may have blocked that out. So, J.I. Packer goes on to say, how can we turn our knowledge about God into knowledge of God? And he says that we use our knowledge about God into contemplation of God. So now we come to something a little bit less tangible, and that's contemplation. And this leads me to my next observation, which has taken me a while to get to. There are three in this talk. And that is of cost. The first was finding the thesaurus. The second was the cost. Now, throughout my life, by observation, by talking with others, by reading, by personal experience, cost is a major factor in becoming a student well-trained in the kingdom of God. It is actually costly to search the thesaurus. And how is that so? There are many costs. There will always be a price. There are many currencies. One of my favourite quotes of recent years when I discovered it or was given to me, I can't remember which, is this from Thomas Cranmer, Archbishop of Canterbury, many, many years ago. He said, God's love takes us on journeys we do not wish to go, makes us travel by roads we do not wish to use, to take us to places we never wish to leave. And that would be my testimony. But we can pick out a whole range of costs and of scriptures alluding to cost, or not alluding to, but directly pointing to it. Jesus said, if anyone wants to follow me, you just got to take up your cross. Or unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains alone. But when it dies, it brings forth much fruit. And so cost, you see, starts in a deeper place with a deeper price to what we may normally give it. It's attendance to God and to Jesus. On the one hand, we can say, I belong to Jesus. I'm a child of God. And so Jesus knows me and loves me anyway. And that's a favorite theme of ours. But let me put another side to it. It's not that Jesus knows me, but how much of Jesus do I know? And that's where we start to find the treasure. That's where we open the thesaurus and we find things we have never found before. I've dipped. I couldn't say I've waded or even swum. I've dipped. But when I've dipped, I have been utterly blessed out of my socks. And I'm not going to particularly tell you how to dip, although I'm going to give you the standard answer. And that is to start to get serious about the spiritual disciplines. Very quickly, I'll give you 12, and you can muddle them around in your mind and think, how well have I entered into these, and what do I know of them, and how costly are they to me? Are they disciplines, or are they just a passing interest? So there are six that you can add to your life. You can take up study and get into the Word of God and into Christian history and all manner of things, and you'll find treasures galore there. You can add worship, and that's not just singing songs or even coming to church. That's a whole range of things. And we're not going to go down there in any way or at all, or any of these. A celebration is another spiritual discipline. Service, and I think many evangelicals know about service. That's probably, we are so well known for service. It's almost become a mantra. Mission. We've got to do mission. Service. Reflection, we can add to our study and our worship. We can add community, and we can also add a spiritual guide to talk to about our spiritual lives. But then there are six that you can give up. So you can give up activity, which means you take on solitude. And you can give up noise. Take out the earplugs, and so you take on silence. You can give up things and be more simple in our lifestyle. You can give up sex and live a life of chastity. You can give up pride and live a life of secrecy that people don't know how generous you'll be, you are. And you can give up necessities and live a life of sacrifice. These are all spiritual disciplines. And they all require something of us, and that is costly. They impinge on our normal activities. They interrupt our routines. They take away one thing that is most precious to us, and that is our time. And they cut across our agendas. Because all of these, most of these, I should say, are anti-countercultural. And the more we are enculturated in our culture, the more costly it will be to use any of these. But if you want to know anything more about Jesus, you will have to make a decision about what spiritual disciplines you are going to adopt and be disciplined to them. You just have to. But further, in terms of cost, there are many other perhaps more spectacular things that we hear or read about. Mark spoke once here about a friend of his in Africa who suffered greatly for her service and her faith. And that is a cost, huge cost. And we've probably heard of them or read missionary stories, of which there are thousands and many other millions or other tens of thousands that will never have been written down, who've been martyred for their faith, who've had to bury their children in other countries, who've had their own parents perhaps turned against them because of their stand, who have given away their wealth because of their commitment to simple lifestyle, who have given away prospects of marriage or of a superb job because they have a higher calling, or given away personal ambition or reputation. All of these are very costly. And all of these are part of the treasure. No one's going to do any of those things unless you have really found the treasure. You're not going to do it because it's fun. You do it because you've found a treasure. You do it because not that you just know that Jesus knows you, but you know Jesus. Do you know of anybody like that? Who you know them because they have God eyes that see and God ears that hear, and understandings and insights that you think, I never saw that. I never got that. These God stories, people are bringing God stories because they're seeing and they're hearing and they have insight into what's going on. It's part of the treasure. And some of us look on and say, whoa, where did that come from? So there it is. The thesaurus is a wealth of insight and wisdom, a way of seeing, a relationship, and enabling to see God as though through a kaleidoscope, many-coloured, many-shaped, many-faceted, very active, very surprising, very loving, and very near. But because God's thesaurus is so vast, his treasure is so immense, infinite as God himself is infinite, any one of us can only say we see through a glass darkly, using Paul's term. There is still always, always much more to know about Jesus and to discover. I've been very glad to have moved around the denominations, not because I've sought it, because that's how our journey has been. I was brought up Church of England. I was converted in the YMCA. I was baptized in the Church of Christ. I visited the Pentecostals. I was inclined to the Baptists for a while. I ended up with the Brethren. How horrors. And for many, many years, I there pastored in Brethren churches. But then we moved on and we went to an amazing amalgam of church in Washington, D.C. We came back to Australia and we worshipped with the Uniting Church of Australia. Then we came back to New Zealand and we worshipped with the Chartwell Church, Anglican, Presbyterian and Methodist. And all of those have enriched me. And I'm back here now, which I'm not sure what this is. It's quasi-brethren, but it's something else. And I feel sad for people who say, I've been in this one church for 40 years. Well, you've missed so much. How on earth are you going to plumb the depths of God's riches when you just have one party line? And then there was the gain. Well, maybe we've spoken about the gain all the way through. The treasure and the pearl. But I'd just leave you with one question, and I don't want an answer. It's for you to answer. Although it would be an interesting exercise to have some dialogue on it, but I'm not good like Philip is with that. Most of the time I can't hear what you say anyway. And the second time, I don't know how to answer on the foot. And this is the question. And I think of myself in this because I have a mate across the road who's my neighbour. And here it is. What would you say to your neighbour, your non-Christian neighbour, if they ask you what gain there is in becoming a Christian? Jesus, write those things that you want written on our hearts this morning.